episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
Hi, and I'm Bill Cundiff.
Sing it for us, Bill.
Hey, we got a sponsor this
that's
hour.
That's not singing, that's talking. Are you a rapper?
No.
Oh.
No, I can't rap. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, and they've got everything you can imagine when it comes to John Deere. If you want a tractor or a mower or implements, you need parts or service, they do it all up there. Go up and see them. And their phone number,
530-226-9226.
Very good.
I know. So the repetition's working for me.
Yeah, is it working?
I hope it's working for everybody else, too.
Yeah, go up and see them. They're there and ready to serve you. So,
yes.
What's going on today?
Well, let's see. Free advertisement of the day goes out again to Nicolet Glass because they are the greatest. And they are bringing me some spectacular screens on Monday to block the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the front of the house. Our kitchen will no longer be 800
See,
degrees
I'm
by
glad
930.
I'm glad you're doing that because as soon as they get them on, the temperature's going to probably drop down to like mid-80s, high 70s.
No, they're coming on Monday.
And we won't need
them. No, it's still August. They said 4 to 6 weeks. I knew it wouldn't be. They're never 4 to 6 weeks. That's just silly. So, anyway, I will for sure this week, because I forgot last week, but I will for sure look up their info and have it ready when we come back again. And
so, yeah, everybody knows who Nicolet Glass is. They've been around
a long
time.
If you live in Reading and you don't know who they are, then you're silly.
You never broke a window.
They have great techs, and they do all sorts of stuff. They'll come out and look and help you figure out solutions. They're really nice. So today we're talking about the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. It's NCMEC. Is that how you say it?
It is.
Is it NCMEC? All right. First time I heard that, I was like, the what? So then I started chatting with our guest here, Paul Skinner, and I was like, what? No one knows about this. Well, I mean, maybe they do. I didn't know about it. So I figure if I don't know about it, there's got to be some other people. So our guest, Paul Skinner, he is a member of Team ATOM, which is the Investigative Resource Provision Unit of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, NCMEC. We'll be saying that a lot today. So, you know, when we say that, then you'll know what it means. He has professional experience of 4 decades. So he's old like we are, which is awesome.
Yes.
Because age and treachery always overcomes youth and skill. We know that, right? He's been working in municipal policing, working in the criminal justice system, and then the prosecution of offenders. Yay. Paul is a graduate of the FBI National Academy, where he majored in the management of cold case investigations. That's what kind of got me before, too. He has experience as an adjunct professor for Humphreys University, teaching criminal justice students in advanced and complicated investigations. As a member of Team ATOM, Paul brings experience and expertise in the areas of cold case investigations, spatial behavior of offenders, I want more on that, and the prosecution of no-body homicide cases. Those are the ones that, are there a lot of people who are good at that? That seems like that'd be kind of a specialized space.
It is a specialized space. Fortunately, that's a space that's growing, especially in the area of prosecutors getting skilled up on how to present those cases to a jury.
When you don't have a body. Wow. I would imagine, well, Investigation Discovery runs 24/7 with murder shows. I think there's a couple channels, actually. So I don't think there's any shortage of people doing bad things to other people.
No, unfortunately.
Yeah, that seems to be a pretty consistent, you know, throughout human history. Is your specialty children now that you're working with NCMEC? Or, when you were regular, you know, in the police area, it was just anything, whatever cases came through your division.
That's true. It was anything. Fortunately, though, most of my career was spent in investigations.
Nice.
And during that time, I was in the East Bay area of San Francisco. And we had a series of child abductions that, despite our best efforts, we could not solve. We had about 8 girls disappear, no information on them. was developed. At one point, we had a suspect list that would could be volumes. Everything from people wanting to report their ex-husband as a possible suspect to somebody reporting the astronaut John Glenn as a possible suspect. So we spent a lot of time chasing leads that didn't really go anywhere. Those cases are still active on those cases.
Wow.
And the investigators that worked on those cases are still active in getting together and discussing things that have changed in the criminal justice system since then, mostly technology, and looking backwards at those cases as to what can be done on those things.
One thing I notice, and you probably know this, but the advancements in DNA is cracking a lot of cases now, isn't it?
It is, and specifically mitochondrial DNA, where we're getting sources of DNA and then tracing back to the maternal mother. The other thing that's has been an absolute gold mine for cold case investigators is the proliferation of outside organizations like 23andMe or DNA Family History. So we're solving cases now based on close DNA matches with somebody who is close to the offender. And now we have that person identified. Let's take a look at who's within their family circle.
Right, right.
Isn't that how they found the Golden State Killer?
That's exactly how they found the Golden State Killer. That was Paul Holes from the Contra Costa County Crime Lab that came up with that concept and started tracing it backwards, and that's where he was able to identify the suspect on that case. And he was actually offended in the city where I worked. And we were despondent at times because we knew we had a viable suspect. We knew it was a suspect known as an East Area Rapist. We had no idea who this person was. None.
Wow. Hiding right in plain sight, as they
apparently he was. Say. He was within, and we'll talk about that when it comes to spatial relationships. But he was within a half mile of the site each time it occurred. In our city, so
no kidding.
It gets down to basics.
Yeah,
but your question's a great question. Now with mitochondrial DNA, touch DNA, and MVAC, we may talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah, and I find it amazing that on a lot of these cases, they could be 20 years old and or older, and they still have the evidence file, and they can still go back and get DNA off some of that evidence.
It is amazing to me, and with this position I have with NCMEC, I talk with investigators who weren't even born when we're talking about a particular case, and yet I'm so impressed because they are up to speed. They know who all the involved parties are. They've done background checks on people and refreshed all their information before I ever talked to them.
Wow. Yeah, that's the whole technology field is and now they're doing this AI technology, and every day you're hearing something new with that, how they're getting involved with a lot of stuff and cracking cases too. So
it's true.
It's pretty amazing.
All right. So you provided us with this handy list.
I did.
We don't typically work from a list, but you know what? A list is probably good for us so we don't rabbit trail the heck out of it and then go, oh my God, look at the time. Okay. So talk to us about national, missing, I always get it wrong, the NCMEC thing. What is it? National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Exploited Children, yes.
I can't say it when I'm looking at someone. I have to close my eyes.
Okay. In 1981, a young man by the name of Adam Walsh was abducted from a shopping mall in Florida. And you may know his father, John Walsh, who was the creator of America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
John and Reeve Walsh... In spite of all their sorrow, in spite of their family being destroyed, took a look at law enforcement's response and realized that law enforcement did not have a coordinated response that extended over jurisdictional boundaries, and that there are budgetary considerations that an agency has to consider when investigating a long-term case. And so their concern was there should be a better way to track this. There should be a national database of missing children. We should be looking at how to coordinate between law enforcement organizations. And keep in mind, the average staffing of a law enforcement organization in the U.S. is 25 or less. So when you have a major case and you're operating an organization of 22 people 24/7,
Yeah.
It doesn't take long before you're overwhelmed and you're without resources.
Yeah.
Well, and it's not like everything else stops.
It's not like everything else stops.
You still have all the regular stuff going on.
You still have all the calls for service coming in. And so what John and Reeve did is they came to President Reagan and they asked for a bill. And in 1984, we had the Missing Children Assistance Act that was signed by President Reagan. And both John and Reeve were there to witness that signing, which was a great event to occur. And as a result, here we are. We have the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. It's a nationwide organization, and we also extend our services outside of the country, especially during times of disaster. We're a nonprofit, non-governmental organization, but we're congressionally funded. That's kind of a unique.
That is unique.
A unique situation. And we have numerous programs that are directed towards finding and returning missing children and finding and prosecuting those people that exploit our children. Hmm. And I'm in one piece of that organization, which is Team Adam. And we are all retired people that come from varied backgrounds. We have retired anthropologists, retired forensic odontologists. We have psychiatrists. We have people from Secret Service, FBI, highway patrols from every state, local police organizations, CIA. We are a very, very diverse group of people.
And you're not in a... It's not like you're in an office, a local office. I mean, my guess is you're all over the country and you work basically in conjunction with each other, but remotely?
Exactly. Okay. We are spread all over. Our offices are in Arlington, Virginia.
Oh.
And so we have the bulk of the full-time personnel work out of Arlington. The rest of us that are a part of Team Adam, we're geographically spread out. And we have both a footprint that we respond to critical cases for, and then we have a mode where something big happens and we need more people. And we'll do that. And then we also have segments within my group, within Team Adam, that will look at old cold cases based on law enforcement's request, or work with local agencies on children who are missing that we suspect are being exploited.
So my guess is you run the gamut from the cold case to the kid who went missing yesterday?
Yes.
Okay. So it isn't just all... you know, the ship has sailed. I mean, some of these kids are potentially found.
Most of them are.
Nice.
So we, in 2022, of those children that reported missing to NCMEC by law enforcement, we recovered over 90% of them.
Wow.
Now, I'm not saying that we did. I'm saying we,
but
in conjunction with law
enforcement. Kind of part of it. Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a tool in the toolbox for overwhelmed. I mean, you got, look at some of like our sheriff's offices and stuff, like in Northern California. If you just look at that, I mean, they're way under a dozen people.
I'm so glad to use the term overwhelmed because all of us in Team Adam had those cases and still have them in our heads and wish we had the resources that we're now providing to local law enforcement.
That makes sense.
Without charge. So it's a great tool for local law enforcement. We do not get involved in cases that we're not invited in on.
Oh.
So local law enforcement.
You don't get to go peruse the...
No.
They call you or whatever, and you become deployed.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting because there are so many, we were kind of laughing, earlier that, it's the federal government and, they mess up everything. But it's like, hey, here's something your tax dollars are doing that's actually a good thing.
It sounds like
a really efficient thing as well.
It is, and I've been part of the organization for 2 years now, and I am constantly impressed with the amount of dedication that our people have and the amount of resources that we can provide to a local agency that is they're up against the wall.
Well, who has access to a CIA guy and an FBI guy and a former homicide investigator and, and you can pull people from that geography who know that geography really well because maybe like you, they spent, 30 years or 40 years there. And here you have a guy that's been there five.
And exactly. And when I,
sometimes time is your.
Yeah. And so when I look at my roster of fellow members of Team Adam, my roster is divided into half. One half is their name and the state and their location. The second half is their area of expertise. So, for an example, on a deployment, I really wanted to know how historical can, how far back can we go on a search of property for human remains? So I went to my roster and went down to my search expert, called my search expert, and we got that question answered within 10 minutes.
Wow.
That's impressive.
It was neat. It was really cool.
Very few things we can get done in 10 minutes. Yes. couldn't get any. Never mind. Made a call the other day to something that was really easy. I couldn't get that done in 10 minutes. I can't even kill grasshoppers in 10 minutes. Spent sure. a lot of time on that last week, too. Got to take a quick break. We will be right back with our guest, Paul Skinner. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm going to do doing bad things to you.
People think I'm crazy, cause I worry all the time. If you paid attention, you'd be worried too. You better pay attention, or this world you love so much might just kill you. I could be wrong now, but I don't think so. Cause there's a jungle out there. There's a jungle out there. It's a jungle out there.
Theme song from our favorite detective, Monk. Yeah, favorite it. Fake detective.
Love it.
I found that in my travels. I thought, oh, Paul will like that one.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so what else do you guys do? We were breaking our own rule. We were talking during the break. We never talk during the break because then we learn stuff and we don't tell the rest of the people out there listening. But you were saying there's other stuff that you guys do beyond Team Adam, of course.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand our mission. Our mission is to find missing children. Associated with that is to reduce the child sexual exploitation that is discovered, and to also prevent future victimization. So my team mostly concentrates on the missing children and the sexual exploitation issue. We have other teams that are also support mechanisms for us. And then we have a separate team that deals with future victimization through programs that occur. And I'll tell you a program that you've probably seen, but you may not be aware of. How many times have you walked into a store and looked to your right and see a small blue sticker that says Code Adam on it?
Mm. I'll go look later.
Okay. If you see that sticker, it's one of our participating retailers.
Oh, okay.
That if a child is reported missing, a mother comes up or a guardian comes up and says, my child is missing.
Like in the store.
In the store. Uh-huh. They have a protocol. They follow that protocol as instructed by NCMEC. They lock down that facility. They put a store employee at the front door and the back door. Nobody comes in. Nobody goes out.
So you guys have already kind of gotten them up to speed. They have a plan.
It's amazing. And we have so many retail participants. Mm-hmm. And locally in the Reading area, one of our biggest participants is Old Navy. And Old Navy, you'll see our brochures there.
I mean, I know this is sort of going out at the backwards, but
no.
I'm sure they contact you. And would like that help, but if you guys go to a retailer and say, hey, you know, do you want to be part of this system? Does anyone ever say no?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that would be kind of crazy.
I don't think so. When you're dealing with children, there's a lot of
that should all be yes.
A lot of cooperation. Yes,
yeah, you would think
from all forms of business.
So if there are people out there who own a business, work at a business, and they're like, hey, wait a minute, do we have that? And they go look, and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way for them to get with the program?
Probably the best way is go on missingkids.org, which is the main NCMEC website.
That's easy.
And, yes.
Missing Kids, and it's not with a Z or anything stupid like that. You spelled it correctly.
It's not
missing
with a Z.
Kids. I hate that.
Yes.
They do that. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we were talking briefly at break. The organization that I work for has many different sections, and we'll be talking about some of those in a few minutes. But one that I really want to highlight is that we have a group that does nothing but investigate the public records domain. So if we come up with some information that we have no idea who this person is or what's going on, our law enforcement calls us and says, hey, we need some help. We're looking for Tupelo Teddy. We have the capacity with our analytical group to run their records to find out who's used that moniker in the past.
Ah.
Yeah, because I would imagine there's probably rules in place that don't allow you just to go investigate people without their permission, right? I mean,
well, if somebody is a suspect on a case, we don't need permission from them,
right?
Especially involving a child. But if information comes up and we need a deep dive as far as public records go, then we have a section that provides that information for us.
How many? One of our listeners asked, how many of these kids do you find are taken by parents, and is that really classified as a kidnapping?
So
non-custodial.
So we talk about non-custodial. That's about 5% of our caseload is non-custodial parents, where one parent is upset over something. You know, you can fill in the blank.
Yeah.
And decides to take the child away from the other parent, either in violation of a court order or with a court order. So it's about 5% of our total caseload. Most of our caseload involves the runaway endangered child.
And the kid actually did run away on purpose? Got snatched?
Most of our caseload involves kids who just decide to run away.
Okay.
But the problem is, remember this, and this is something I want your listeners to really concentrate on, is that upon checking on our runaways from 2022, we found that 1 in 6 were involved with some type of sexual exploitation issue.
Once they ran away, they ended up getting involved.
Once they run away.
Yeah.
Because they're either running from something or they're running to something.
Right.
And with social media as it is, these predators are finding kids on social media and promising them all types of things to meet up with or to socialize with or to work for.
Right.
And with the
you're scowling here.
Yes, I know. I saw Sound of Freedom twice same week, was an amazing movie, and I was glad I saw it twice. But that's why I was really focused on getting this program out there, because I thought this is very much on people's minds now. You know, that is a real thing, despite the media's best efforts to tell everyone it was. What was it? It was a. Wasn't it a right-wing QAnon plot or something?
QAnon, yeah.
I mean, it's like, what?
You're kidding.
No, they actually said that. That was big on, you know, MSLSD and all of them. They were all talking about how it was a rumor, you know. This wasn't a real thing.
Like, yeah, the numbers weren't right, and there weren't really
that
many
kids
that
went
missing.
And there weren't that many kids, in sex slavery and all that. So you're the expert. When you watched that movie and you saw the stats, were you going, or were you going, oh, that's silly?
No, they're
totally right.
The stats are completely right. Yeah, let me give you an idea of how NCMEC works. There's a call center that law enforcement will call, our parents will call. We average 400 calls a day. So this is a 24-hour-a-day operation.
Wow.
Everything from detectives calling saying, hey, I need some help with a 10-year-old case, to investigators calling saying, I need some help with one that just jumped off, to parents calling saying, I don't know what to do. I've reported the child missing to law enforcement. How do I help? And as soon as that call is reported, or if there's even tips, it goes right to a case manager, and the case manager takes a look at the information that's provided, and then will reach out to one of us from Team Adam to say, call this law enforcement organization. Call this detective, call this parent if necessary, to form that liaison as quickly as possible. So we have, we like to say that our motto is you call, we haul. It's probably not such a good motto, but in truth, that's exactly
what happens. Exactly. Yeah, sure.
That's what happens. And a lot of it's based on the age of the case, the information that's provided, the location. So as a good example, there was a case called the Rodney case where a young lady disappeared from South Lake Tahoe last year.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I was the nearest NCMEC representative, and I was told be on the road within the hour. So when I got to the command post was extremely well organized, and they had everything going on that they needed. I had my list of resources that I could help provide them, and they had already gained those resources through other means. So I was more of an observer than anything else. That case, unfortunately, wound up with the discovery of her body at the bottom of the lake. But that case initiated by a call to the call center. And then the call center reached out, and we were assigned for deployment.
So you do a lot of actual in-field interviews and work, or is most of it done online and on the phone?
I'd say probably 80% of my work is virtual work, where I'm either on FaceTime or on the phone or exchanging emails with investigators from other organizations. 20% would be deployments.
Hmm. So when you, like when they tell you to go there, do they always send someone or is at the time, do you interview people and is that part of your, I guess it depends on the case.
No, it doesn't depend on the case. Oh. I don't interview anybody.
You don't?
Except for law enforcement. I come into law enforcement and say, I'm from NCMEC. These are the resources that we have available to you. And we'll set in other briefings and we'll keep track. And if I see something starting to kick off, like a long-term search, we'll start moving that direction with the resources.
But you don't talk to the parents. You don't get involved at that level. That's always whatever's happening on that particular scene.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so how much of a departure is that from what you, before you were the interview of the parents, right?
It's really hard. It's extremely hard.
Let me in there. I got questions.
I want to be in the middle of it. Yeah. I'll be sitting in a briefing and somebody will say something. I'll be thinking, wait a minute.
Did you ask them this?
Then I have to hold myself back and say, okay, these are the resources that we have available for you.
Yeah, that's tricky.
Yeah, it is.
That's gotta be hard.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like, I don't know. I feel like you're a chef, but you've got to teach other people over the internet. You know?
Yeah.
No, you're mixing it wrong.
I will tell you, one of the greatest things about this job is I deal with highly functional, dedicated investigators that are pulling their ever-living hair out because they've hit a wall. And sometimes I can help them because I can give them resources that they hadn't thought about.
Mm-hmm.
Other times I can listen to them and say,
been there?
Yep, been there, done that. And yeah, you're up against the wall, and you may have to go with this case unsolved for a while, which police people do not do well with at all.
That's got to be one of the hardest things. You're hot on a case, and all of a sudden you just run out of leads, and you just got nowhere to go.
Yes. I run into retired investigators all the time, and all they want to talk about is that one.
The one that got away? Literally.
Yeah, that one case or those several cases.
It never leaves you.
No, it never does.
When we were kids, nobody talked about kids getting abducted.
That's true.
I mean, you know, we had to come home when the streetlights came on, that kind of stuff. Don't take candy from strangers. We did have an ice cream man, so we did run to the white truck with money when we heard the song. So that was probably bad training. It seems like people are much more vigilant with their kids sometimes to the detriment of children. I mean, they have no freedom to make choices and make decisions. So sometimes they grow up and make bad choices when they get behind the wheel of your car. Is it getting better or is it just different?
I think it's different. We used to have cases when I first got involved in law enforcement in 1973 where we would have the flasher. The occasional rape suspect, those types of things, which are terrible, terrible crimes to put on children. But now we seem to hear a lot about it, and I don't know if that's because of the proliferation of social media.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of curious about.
Or the news cycle.
We have stations dedicated to this, like, you know, the forensic thing. The forensic files, they never run out of episodes. I mean, they're running. I don't know if they're running 24/7, but I think they're running 24/7. So that stuff never seems, and I realize with history, the volume gets bigger, but it seems like it's everywhere. Is it everywhere?
It is, unfortunately.
And it's little towns, big towns.
Yes.
It's not, it used to be kind of a city thing. Now that's not so much a distinction, is it?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's all offender based. So wherever the offender decides to base himself,
that's
usually the base of operations.
Do you think like a little town, you'd think it'd be easier to catch them or not?
Usually is.
Is it?
Think about a little town.
Well, yeah, that's
how many people know your business?
Everybody.
Hopefully everybody, yeah.
Exactly.
That's kind of what I was thinking. It might be easier to catch them there in a big city, disappear. So how much of this, like from the movie Sound of Freedom, so kids being taken from one place, moved to another place, you know, the appearance being changed, all those kinds of things, that's got to be pretty common? Is that?
Unfortunately, it is.
That's got to be kind of the MO, right?
It is. It is.
How many of them are taken out of the country? How many kids kidnapped in this country are taken elsewhere?
We have no idea. None.
Because if you didn't find them, I guess you don't know where they went.
No. Anecdotally, we could say put a percentage to those missing children that had never been recovered, but we don't know. We have missing children from Shasta County that have never been recovered. And are they out of country? Don't know. Are they out of state?
Don't know.
Don't know. I mean, the reality is we just don't know.
As far as like, organizations that move children around, I would imagine that's a major focus. Because if you can stop the pipeline, obviously it's a lot harder. It's a lot harder for Billy Bob the moron to snatch Susie from her walk home from school and then somehow manage this elaborate plot. I mean, it'd be easier if they had a big network.
They do. They have big networks. The ones that we're coming across, at least in Northern California, have all been single-person networks.
Really?
And they'll advertise periodically with other people of like mind that I have somebody available for
Stop
you.
Stop it.
But they don't. I haven't heard of anybody in my conversations with the investigators and cases that we've worked on the last couple of years. I haven't heard of a large group.
Really?
Yeah.
It is just like some weird...
It's a commodity.
Creep who's selling children.
Yes.
Wow. And I would imagine the age range is pretty wide.
You name it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just depends. More girls than boys?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Statistically, more girls than boys.
And what about on the offender's side? Are they predominantly male, female?
Very predominantly male.
Mm-hmm.
When we have a female offender, it's news.
Oh.
Really. It comes across the airwaves real quickly.
Well, because in Sound of Freedom, it was that lady who was like luring the kids away.
It was.
That's what I wondered. But that was a big network. She wasn't the
right.
She wasn't the whole thing. She was just part of the puzzle.
Yeah.
God.
She was the moneymaker.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys work with people in other countries?
We do. We do. We interact with law enforcement in other countries. We actually go to other countries too when there's a disaster.
Oh.
And children are involved or they suspect that they've lost children, we'll have a response team of NetMec Team Adam.
Because I would imagine, you have a big disaster like that. That's a great time to grab up a bunch of kids.
We were deployed to Puerto Rico when they had the hurricane down there. And we had people on the ground there to work with the FBI and State Department.
Make sure they're not
down there.
Not walking away with everybody's kids in the chaos.
Chaos is the right word.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you get a little chaos going, and it's like, oh, hey, swoop in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the perfect song for that. All right. So I've got to take a quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Paul Skinner. He is with NECMEC, and we're talking about missing and exploited children. Information and resources for you, and you can find it all at wethepeopleradio.us. This is Cindy at Lauk's Landscape Supply, located at the intersection of Dersch, Turn Creek, and Airport Road. We are your one-stop shop for everything in your yard. We have all the small rental equipment, like the stand-on mini skid steers to get you through those walk-through gates, or Beretto trenchers on tracks are quick and easy to operate, and the popular vibroplates for compaction of pathways or prepping for under artificial turf. Make your job easy with the powered wheelbarrow on tracks. And of course, we have all the products to make your yard the envy of the neighborhood, including all the soils, sands, grass,
gravel, sod, pavers, retaining wall blocks, and multiple size trucks to deliver with no minimum, making your delivery the most cost-effective way to get your job done. So whatever your project, big or small, come check out Lauk's Landscape Supply at the intersection of Dersh, Churn Creek, and Airport Road. Find us on the web at laukslandscapesupply.com or give us a call at 530-378-2220. Lauk's Landscape Supply, where we take pride in your project.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
She's got a smile that it seems to me reminds me of childhood memories, where everything was as fresh as the bright blue sky. Now and then when I see her face, she takes me away to that special place, and if I stare too long, I'd probably
And on the break, Paul was showing us a picture. Okay, so facial recognition is something you guys, like reconstruction, I mean, something that you guys do. Or you have people who do that.
It is. We have a team that does that. And
that's like the most amazing thing.
I'm telling you,
there's like a lot of amazing things, but that's really amazing.
These people are so talented and... the work product that they put out for investigators is just gold, because the investigator's dealing with what is found,
yeah,
trying to figure out who it is and what happened to that poor child. And so to put those pieces together, we need to know who that child is. And our reconstructionists will do that, again, at no cost to local law enforcement.
That's got to be massive help.
Oh, it's so awesome. And then that information gets sent back to the detective, and the detective now has that one piece that he or she didn't have before. So that all those pieces together leads to the successful conclusion, hopefully.
Well, like in that one, the picture that the reconstruction person came up with.
Yes.
Then when you figured out who the child was, the side by side of the actual child.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
And
this is very common of work that they do.
Bone structure and all those kinds of things.
They do it based on bone structure. They take x-rays. They do MRIs. They do all this research work before they start putting together what that person looked like in life.
I think we've all seen like one of those shows. It's funny. We just saw one the other day.
Yeah, we just saw one the other day.
Where they made the clay, the clay model of the girl. And it was it was a fictional program, that one was, but I know that there are people who can do that. So, do those people have to, I'm just curious on the process, do they have to go there and see everything, or can they just be sent all the data and can they do it from that?
They're sent the data.
Wow.
And they do, I know, it's just, to me it's amazing. And if that's not amazing enough, every 5 years on Jane Doe's, John Doe's.
Oh, they age them.
Or missing children who we've been able to identify, they will age progress them, and that information will be sent back to law enforcement again, and law enforcement can make the decision whether or not they publish that information or not. Obviously, there's reasons not to. If you're working that case and you have something,
why would you not do it? What are
you may not want people involved in that case to know that case has risen back up. To the top of your attention.
Right.
And then there's times where you may want to put that information out. But if you do, it's like everything else, then you have to be prepared for the onslaught of calls.
Oh, I forgot about that part.
Because once you identify that person, now you got something to go on, because you can start looking at the people that are close to them, and you can start developing leads. But if you don't know who that person is, you've got nowhere to really go, do you?
No, you're kind of stuck. You can go through the records, and of course we are the clearinghouse for records of missing and exploited children, so you can go through our records, which is very easy because we do that work for the investigator. But you still need to identify that poor child, that poor victim.
Mm-hmm.
Along with that group, we have a biometric technical group that deals with the collection of DNA, dental records, and fingerprint records. And so as an example, I was called recently and asked on a 2005 case if I would obtain mitochondrial DNA from the mother of this child that's been missing since 2005. Well, it's been a while since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So in my research, I find out the mother's deceased. But we really want mitochondrial DNA. We want the source DNA is what we really want. So we're faced with an option. Do we go to the family and say, will you sign a permission for exhumation?
Right, that's tough.
Which is tacky at best and mm-hmm. tough. But we found out that, I think I was sharing with Aaron earlier, we found out in the state of California that since 1967, every child that's been born, there's been a blood sample taken from the child's heel of their foot to test for some other type of issue. Those are all retained. So when we found out those were retained, we determined that we could have access to those, and we were able to get the child's actual child's DNA, and now that's placed in a databank so that if remains are located at some point,
right,
we can at least identify those remains.
Yeah, because that's the tough thing. I mean, you could get DNA, but if there's nothing to match it to,
it's... Well, that's what we had with the Golden State Killer, who was known as the East Area Rapist before. We had DNA. Every agency where he was involved, we had DNA. But we had no idea who that person was.
Yeah, couldn't match it to anybody.
It's kind of like fingerprints. The old days when we had fingerprints, we go, woo, we got fingerprints. As a new officer, I'd be all excited, and the detectives would go, yeah, okay, cowboy. Yeah. Who do we compare them to?
Right.
You know, the entire population of California?
Yeah, right.
No.
Yeah, but this mitochondrial thing, I mean, it's really cracking some stuff open because you don't need to know. With the DNA sample, you don't need to know exactly who that person is. You can backtrack it, kind of reconstruct it, and narrow it down to a select few.
Well, you have the match on the DNA either through one of the commercial establishments. So you have a familiar match, a family match. And then you look at the family and say, okay, what do we know? Well, we know that the offender was a male, so we exclude all females.
Right.
We know the offender at the time was in his mid-20s, and it's been 20 years since then, so we exclude everybody that's outside of that age parameter. And guess what?
Yeah, who lived in the area?
We get down,
to a few. Yeah, you can narrow it down.
Yeah.
How many of the DNA companies out there, like 23andMe and so forth, are they all offering their data? Databanks to you, or some of them still saying, hey, that's private, we're not going to share it?
Probably the best way to answer that question is usually that information is requested with a search warrant or a subpoena.
Oh, okay.
So whatever their policy is, the search warrant or subpoena supersedes their policy.
Okay. All right.
God. Well, with this, you guys are constantly adding people to the, like, NCMEC roles?
We are.
I'm guessing.
We are.
That's kind of nice. And I would imagine, as somebody who has a ton of experience over the years, because, like, how much, everybody's retired, so I would imagine if you're on a case, you work more. If you're consulting on something, maybe less, but... Is it a time commitment you can control, or does it eat your lunch like it did when you were actually on the job?
That is the true beauty of this. I retired and was not ready to retire. I have done all types of things post-retirement. This by far is the best. Mm. I can pick it up. I can put it down based on my caseload and deployments. And if I get a call to deploy on a certain situation and I can't make it for whatever reason, no harm, no foul. They go to the next nearest person.
Right.
So I tell people I finally found the job I've been looking for the past 45 years.
But you wouldn't have had the experience. You couldn't have done it, which is sort of funny.
Exactly. And I work with the most talented people you could ever imagine and the most giving people. There is no professional hoarding of information.
Right.
Amongst our team members. And there is an overall feeling of, We will do anything for you that you need. I have a counterpart in Bakersfield. Every time I get deployed, he calls me up and goes, dude, I'll be there in 6 hours.
Oh.
And whether I need him or not, he's willing to do that.
Are any of these people folks that you worked with back when you were working, or are they all new?
None of them.
No kidding?
None of them are.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, so it's a whole new friend set. It's just amazing. And I'll share with you one quick story. I was deployed.
No, we want a lot of stories.
Okay. I was deployed to Klamath Falls last year on several missing persons cases and deployed with two other people from Team Adam. I had no idea who they were. I knew their names. I could see their area of expertise on the roster. As you can imagine, I was a little bit nervous. I was kind of the new guy compared to those two. And I get there and I meet these two and oh my God. One guy who's been a homicide investigator for 25 years, very thorough, very meticulous. The other team, Adam, a person was an expert on polygraphs, and she could read a polygraph chart and watch a videotape and have 50 questions at the end of the video as to why this wasn't asked or next time we need to ask these questions. Hmm. And I know I must have looked stupid because I was sitting there just going, oh, my God, I am out of my class here. These people are amazing. Yeah. And I'm finding that system-wide.
Right.
That's
right.
Really awesome because a lot of times, you know, I mean, we're not seeing that in every facet of, you know, government.
Yeah.
Just, you know, when you get to that. And I think sometimes with especially children, people want, like, I brought this up the other night. I was at a meeting and I brought up that we were going to be talking about this. And someone said, well, yeah, I mean, it just depends. I mean, are they actually in on it or are they really looking for these kids? And I didn't throat punch the guy, but I will give you his name. And I thought, really? I mean, how cynical have people gotten? I think pretty cynical.
Yeah. You know, I was talking with a lieutenant from local sheriff's department the other day and we were laughing about the complaints that I used to receive about me.
Oh.
And complaints that he received about him. And the person didn't even know who they were talking to. So there's reality.
Yeah.
And then there's reality according to their lifespan.
Remember that guy who didn't buy a tractor at George's Equipment because of that bee in the front office? And Bill's like, oh, you mean my wife? Those were good times.
Oh, yeah.
Slightly, awesome. Slightly different venue, but same idea.
Yeah.
Well, but I think people have gotten kind of cynical about it. They're thinking, well, these kids are all missing because no one's really doing anything.
That's true. That's true. And we've, a law enforcement herd itself. You know, we used to have that stupid policy of wait for 24 hours. You know, the kid's just a runaway. That whole mentality is gone.
That's been gone for how long do you think? Because you do see.
I would say probably 20 years. 20 years ago, they were working on that really hard. I know in the Bay Area, we used to have it's just a runaway mentality. And the person we put into the National Registry as a missing persons, maybe next shift or something along that line.
Was this mostly teenagers or was this little kids?
Yeah, what's the age group for your cases? I mean, what's the limit? 18 or?
No, we'll go up to 21.
Oh, really?
If we have special issues, mostly 18, but if we have special issues, especially autistic children, we'll go up to 21 on that.
Oh, yeah.
But that doesn't mean we don't participate as an allied agency when somebody has a missing persons case that says, hey, I heard you guys can make a satellite fly over and take images of the earth, and we have a missing adult, then we'll certainly work with them on that. Mm. And that's one of those virtual things that we were talking about.
That's kind of handy. What about these signs on the freeway? You know, look for a red Honda, you know, missing child.
Oh, the Amber Alert.
Yeah, the Amber Alert. Thank you.
That comes from CHP in Sacramento.
Is that helpful?
I mean, it's very helpful.
You think it can't hurt, but do you get a whole, I mean, does it just ramp up the calls and maybe?
It's very helpful.
Okay.
Really, really helpful. And so what happens is instead of it going out to just law enforcement, that information goes out to the motoring public. So people who are driving see that and go, red Honda. We just passed the rest stop. There's a red Honda with a little girl in it. Maybe law enforcement needs to know this. And before the officer gets that call or that direction to go check on that car, he or she already knows that that car's out there, that that car's wanted.
Oh,
whether or
sure.
not they were on the freeway or not, right. they've already been told that.
Well, you had told me about one at a rest stop. We have like a couple minutes. You had told me about one at a rest stop that was, because, I mean, I figure things like this, it's good to know that law enforcement and experts are out there doing this, but let's face it, there's a lot more of us than there are of you.
Absolutely.
So I figure part of our mission today is like help us be like more helpful, you know, smarter.
Well,
so the rest stop lady was a great story.
I appreciate that. And this was a lady who, because of her work, would travel the same route every other day on Interstate 5. And because of her coffee addiction, she would have to stop at a certain rest stop each time. And she noticed that there was a particular car with a young girl in it and a male driving parked at the end where most people don't park because it's too far to walk to go to the restroom place. She noticed that, and she got the creeps, the feeling. You know what I mean? The hair on the back of your neck.
Yep.
And then the very next week, she noticed the same thing with a different child in the car.
Same car, same guy, same driver.
Notified law enforcement. Law enforcement acted on it and found that we had an exploitation issue. And in that case, that child had been traded off. So
wow,
yeah. So those people that think that we don't do anything about these cases are wrong. They may not hear about it. We may not be out there tooting our horn or telling people this is what's going on.
Like you said, though, a lot of times you don't want certain people to know you're looking at them, or you know, you don't want them to know you're working that case and you're waiting for a bigger lead.
Yeah, there's a bigger problem too, or associated problem, and that's you don't want to give family false hope.
Oh.
And so that cycle that these poor families go through is just gut-wrenching.
Yeah, that is that's just, I don't know. You get into all of those things and you can't walk away from it. We're going to talk more with our guest Paul Skinner. And you're listening to We the People. Find us at wethepeopleradio.us.